The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
Alrighty. Florida passed a school safety bill yesterday. Our schools are going to be safe in Florida now. First, let me tell you how the rest of the media is going to report on it, and then I'll tell you what it actually means. If you're, you know, scrolling through the internet today, the dominant flash headlines will be, Florida passes bill allowing school staff to be armed. Okay, the headline's not wrong. The new bill will allow librarians, media specialists, whatever the hell that is, advisors and coaches and others to carry a gun on school grounds. Not only does this make schools physically safer, but it also sends a message to any would-be mass murderer that Florida schools are now off limits. You don't know who has a gun. It'll now be in the back of their minds that if they raise their barrel in a school, it's going to be met with multiple barrels aimed back at them. The new bill also provides $300 million in funding for mental health programs, school resource officers, and school safety upgrades. Depending on what those things are, that's probably pretty good. This is all great news. But after taking this important step forward, the state of Florida took a gigantic leap backwards. Mixed in with all of the measures that actually will improve school safety, the Florida House of Representatives got to work doing what they really wanted to get out of this crisis, and that is gun control. First of all, the bill restricts firearm purchases for everyone under 21. Oh, geez, I don't even know where to begin on this one. So let's start with the most obvious. How can you approve a bill that nullifies the Second Amendment to anyone aged 18 to 20? I mean, because when you get right down to it, that's what this does. The state of Florida is now saying to their estimated 1 million or so adults in this age bracket that the Bill of Rights does not apply to them. Also, how many mass murderers in the past 5 years have been under the age of 21? The answer is 2. The vast majority are in their upper 20s. By the way, did any of those guys go out and buy those guns? 30s and 40s. I want to give them any more fuel to crap all over the Second Amendment, but we're not even targeting the right age group. Upper 20s. 30s and 40s. So to the 18-year-old living on your own and struggling to get by in a really rough neighborhood, Florida has declared that it is safer for you not to be able to protect yourself. If someone breaks into your home and attacks you, don't worry. You only have to call the police and then wait. Or most likely call the police after it's all over and hope that one of your neighbors will call the police. The same applies to the 20-year-old single mother and the 19-year-old veteran who Florida agrees can carry a gun in a war zone, just not really in the state. The bill goes on to require a 3-day waiting period to buy all guns, which is completely pointless, and a mandate for background checks, which is already the law. Florida took some good steps with allowing teachers to carry guns and allocating money for mental health and security upgrades. But hidden within all of these cries of do something are always these little chunks of freedom that are slowly getting whittled away. If you didn't watch last night's show, it is available on demand now at The Blaze. We showed you how the Constitution is being raped, violently raped. Every single one of the 10 Bill of Rights, repeatedly, and we are losing all of our rights. We're losing them because we're all crying something has to be done. You can blame the NRA. You can blame the gun manufacturer. You can blame the school or the sheriff. But in the end, the government blames you because the government is taking your rights away. And if we are not careful, if we don't learn the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, freedom will be a long forgotten memory soon.
It's Thursday, March 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, I any foreigner that I know is not concerned about our gun rights. And the reason why is they say it's never going to happen in America. It'll never happen in America. You guys, this is part of your constitution. It's not part of anybody else's constitution. I think two other countries have it. But it is
Mexico and Guatemala.
It is such an important cornerstone of the American Constitution, and many countries define us as this. And they're all like, "You'll never do that. It'll never happen." You guys, I don't know why you guys are freaked out. It'll never happen. I think it's going to happen. I think they're going to try. All you need is a couple of more school shootings. Let me say this. No, I won't say that. I can easily come up with a way where all of our rights are taken overnight, and we will all be chanting for it.
And I can 100% guarantee one scenario where the Second Amendment goes away, which is you stop defending it.
Yes.
The second you stop defending it, they will take every little bit of it. Because, I mean, look, that's the whole goal. I mean, you could tell this by the way they talk about guns. You know, even when, you know,
I can't take it. I can't take it. Is this the montage?
Do you want to hear this?
Okay, yeah. Well, no, I've already heard it. I don't want to.
It is unbelievable.
This will make blood shoot out of your eyes.
But
now, listen.
It leads to a larger point, though.
Yeah, I want you to know, you don't have to be a gun expert to have an opinion on the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment applies to all of us, whether you like it or not. So you don't have to be a gun expert. You don't have to be, well, I can tell you that the wind is now blowing from this direction, and so I need to adjust my... You don't. But you do need to know what the argument is. You need to be able to know what a gun is, what it does, how it works, if you're going to join and say, this gun has to be taken out. Why? Can you tell me why? Listen to the media. And what they say about guns.
Making sure that we don't have high-capacity, rapid-fire magazines that allow mass killings.
Maybe we shouldn't have high magazine clips.
Gas-assisted receiver firearms.
Machine gun magazines.
And what sounded like automatic rounds.
Seeing if we can get automatic weapons that kill folks in amazing numbers.
If I wanted to fire this on full semi-automatic,
well, why do we need jumbo clips?
The best bill
do you know what a barrel shroud is?
I actually don't know what a barrel shroud is.
Okay, because it's in your legislation.
It's a shoulder thing that goes up.
No, it's not.
What the District of Columbia was trying to do was to protect toddlers from guns.
It is harder to buy cough medicine than it is to buy an AK-47 or 50 of them.
It is easier for a teenager to buy a Glock than get his hands on a computer or even a book.
It's legal to hunt humans with 15-round, 30-round, even 150-round magazines.
And he was not able to buy a weapon that shoots off 700 rounds in a minute.
Pistols are different. You have to pull the trigger each time. An assault weapon, you basically hold it, goes... Blah, blah, blah.
It's not true.
No, those are fully automatic weapons. Okay.
This right here has ability with a 30-caliber clip to disperse with 30 bullets within half a second.
Use these silencers to make them more available, which, as you
can imagine, their ears were hurting.
If you want to protect yourself, get a double-barrel shotgun. Put that double-barrel shotgun and fire two blasts outside the house.
If you ban them in the future, the number of these high-capacity magazines is going to decrease dramatically over time because the bullets will have been shot and there won't be any more available.
But some of these bullets, as you saw, have an incendiary device on the tip of it, which is a heat-seeking device. So you don't shoot deer with a bullet that size. If you do, you could cook it at the same time.
But that deer deserves to get away. Let's get serious here. Boom!
Oh my gosh. Heat-seeking bullet. I want some of those. Heat-seeking bullets. Huh.
That's an inexplicable montage by the Washington Free Beacon. The fact that those clips exist is so embarrassing. And we're arguing with these people about the Second Amendment. It's amazing. And
first of all, you know, if I want to turn this into a full semi-automatic weapon, it either is or it isn't a semi-automatic weapon. You don't turn it from a John Wayne six shooter into a semi-automatic. If full means I'm going to clip it now, or I'm going to push it into the fully automatic, which means now I hold the trigger down and it's a machine gun. Those are illegal. In this clip where Obama is saying we need to get rid of these automatic weapons, we've gotten rid of the automatic weapons. There's a ban on those. You have to have. I mean, it takes you a long time. It took me a year to be able to go through the process to get the license to be able to have a fully automatic weapon. It is probably, the ones I have are probably $800 guns. I paid over $20,000 for each of them. I have two of them. I want to fire them because they're fun. I don't fire them because the laws around them are so strict that I'm afraid anytime I touch that gun or take that gun or somebody, God forbid, is going to touch that gun, that I go to prison. So we've already pretty much taken care of those guns. You notice that the bad guys have stopped getting those? No. You know why? Because you can make one if you're handy, if you can just read a book and you're good with tools, you can find somebody or make it fully automatic. You can do it. You'll also go to prison, but I don't think the guys who are either... The choice is, I know somebody who can make one of these for me, and just going to keep it quiet because I'm a drug dealer, or I'm just going to go buy one. I don't care if it costs me $100,000 because I'm a drug dealer.
Yeah, a guy in, I think it was California, just got arrested because he had built several weapons. Like, yes. He was banned from having them,
yes.
But he had built them himself.
Yes.
Because that's, you know,
in
reality.
In today's world with technology, you don't have to be a gunsmith to do it.
But again... Going to the arguments here, you know, when you're asking us to take you seriously when you go for a semi-automatic assault rifle ban, you don't have to. I am not a gun nerd. We have had this happen before, and it is frustrating, I will say, because there's an op-ed in the Washington Post, and they were like, people are just gunsplaining to you. So you bring up an argument and they just pick apart all the things that you said that were wrong about the details of the guns, and that's not important. That's the left's new argument, because they don't know anything about guns. They've given up trying to act as if they do. And now the argument is, stop acting like I can't have an opinion because more about guns than I do.
Okay, all right. Then you know what? I want you to stop acting like I have no right to opinions on race because I'm white.
Right.
I want you to stop telling me that I have no opinions on abortion because I'm a man. All right, you can't have it both ways.
It's ridiculous. But I don't agree with that. Right? I don't agree
either.
You can't have opinions.
You don't have
so
to.
So you can.
But you wait. You can have an opinion on the Second Amendment, but you cannot make the case about a certain gun being banned if you don't know anything about that certain gun.
Yeah. Now, it's true. And what's interesting about it is there is one time where you can, I believe. You can make an argument. When you don't know anything about the difference between semi-automatic and automatic, or handguns and shotguns and assault
rifles.
Or if
you're the vice president and say, take your shotgun out and fire a couple shots in the air. Yeah. It's illegal to do that. If you were an NRA member, you'd know that, Joe. You'd know that.
But you know when it is okay to have that opinion? And you know when it doesn't matter? When you know the difference between semi-automatic and automatic guns? When you're actually going after all guns. You don't need to know the difference between semi-automatic and automatic if you're going for all of them. If your real argument is take them all away, then there's no need to learn about the differences and why they are there and how they would be used and what effects they would have. Because in reality, that's what they're arguing. They know they can't get it right now. They're looking for progressive steps towards the removal of all of them. So there's no need for them to know the difference, because is it a gun or not is the only fact they need.
Does it kill people? Is it a gun? You don't need that kind of gun. By the way, I just want to remind you that the assault rifle is actually a modern sporting rifle. It was not a weapon of war that was brought onto the market. It was a hunting rifle in the 1950s. In the 1950s that the Pentagon saw and went, that's just a better rifle. Can we buy the rights to that and be able to make these for the military? Yes. They were on the market as deer rifles, as hunting rifles, a decade before they went to Vietnam. So please, stop with this is a weapon of war. This is a modern sporting rifle. You know, there's a couple of things we have to do. I want to take people to the range with me. If you are afraid of guns, if you are somebody who, you know, I just don't know where I stand on this. I'm afraid of guns. I want to, and we'll try to come up with a way to do this tomorrow and have you call in tomorrow. But I want to take some people to fire guns who have never done it before, because unless you fired them, unless you know, you have no concept of the sport of rifles, the sport of guns, and how they actually can save your life, not just kill people. Also, if you watched The Push last night, we gave you a homework assignment. If you watched The Push, call us now, 888-727-BECK. I want to switch gears and talk about The Push. We'll do that right now.
Glenn Beck.
There's a lot to talk about today, a lot to cover. We have, coming up in a little while, we have Ryan Holiday. He wrote a book called Conspiracy that is really fascinating about one of the, I think, bigger news stories of the day, coming up in a little while. Also, at the top of hour number three, we are going to talk a little bit about free trade. And just the principles behind free trade. Why is this a conservative principle? Is it real? Is it easy to win a trade war? What's the history behind that? And why is this an important thing for conservatives? We'll deal with those coming up in a minute. Also, yesterday we talked about The Push.
Yeah, a lot of people watched it. Justin says, luckily I was socially compliant and watched The Push. Now Glenn can spoil it. I like that. And also another tweet at World of Stew is where you can tweet these. I'm watching Push and cannot believe this. It's blowing my freaking mind. I'm so embarrassed for him. I can't even look at the screen half the time.
It is terrifying. Now, before we start taking your phone calls on what you learned from it or what you thought, it's a social experiment, except it's. Man, it's borderline reality show, too, you know, to where it was done, I think, in a scientific way. Can you take an average person and convince them to murder a stranger in 90 minutes? Not somebody that is somebody just like you. Can you get them to murder a stranger in 90 minutes? And the results are shocking. People who watch The Push on Netflix, call us now. We're going to take your phone calls next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. So The Push is something on Netflix. It was created by a psychologist who is also a magician in England. And he does social experiments. And this is a one episode. It's not a series. It's just one episode. It's called The Push on Netflix. And it's a documentary, kind of. It's a cross between a documentary and a reality show.
Yeah.
It's an uncomfortable mix. But what he's doing is, can we convince somebody, the average person, to murder in 90 minutes? And they start the episode with a phone call into a restaurant where a woman is sitting with a baby stroller and a baby, and somebody from the restaurant just picks up and they say, "Hey, is this so-and-so's restaurant?" "Yes." "Do you see a woman with a baby carriage?" "Yes." "We're the police. That baby is not hers. We need you to distract her, get the baby, tell her that somebody's waiting for her on the phone, put the phone away, grab the baby carriage, push it out of the restaurant, meet me at the corner." Okay, so in three minutes, they convince somebody to steal someone's baby just because
she's a known child abductor, but she wasn't.
She wasn't. Mm-hmm. And you're only taking the word of a stranger on the phone that he is the police. Okay, it's fascinating. So then they say, "All right, but what we're going to try to do is a lot harder." And I think they have 90 actors and 90 minutes. Everybody's in on it except this one person. They do it to four different people, you find out. And the idea is, can we create a social situation just through social pressure to get these people to actually push a stranger off the top of a building in 90 minutes and kill them? It is unbelievable. One of the most shocking things I've ever seen.
Can we give some classroom guidelines here, Glenn?
Yes.
Okay, so we gave you homework yesterday to watch the show.
Yes.
If you didn't do your homework, that's going to be a problem. However,
it won't, because it'll make you want to watch this even more.
Yeah, that's true. If you are on the phone and you're calling in, we don't want to give away the end of the episode.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about what happened in it.
Yeah, but we don't want to say, did anybody push or not push?
Right.
We don't want to. Don't give that away.
The rest of it, I think, is generally speaking fair game. If you are super, if you're going to watch it tonight, you might want to think about. We're going to try to be as careful as we can, but
yeah,
like,
we're
we can't
not going to. As long as we don't. It's fascinating, even if you know all the way along, because the way they pulled this off is really remarkable. And you're asking yourself the whole question: would I do that? Would I do that? Because it starts small.
Mm-hmm.
Would you do it still?
Absolutely not. No.
How far along would you go?
I mean, the first one is funny for me because it's a vegetarian. And it's that's what they do. They put real meat hot dogs in the, and then they put flags that say they're vegetarian in them because they don't have the vegetarian hot dogs. Even that I wouldn't do but that's just a weird one for me.
Yeah.
I think in a normal situation, people would do that.
Right. This whole situation is somebody is trying to help out this massive charity. Well-known, everybody who's anybody is involved, and they're helping out the main person, and their boss is the one who hooked them up into this. And so the first thing is they're in the kitchen and like, "Geez, man, the vegetarian meat didn't show up. These are just real hot dogs. Just put the vegetarian signs on this." That's the first compliance, and it's breaking down your will and getting you to comply little pieces at a time to build to 90 minutes, you're going to kill somebody because we're asking you to do it. And it's amazing.
I'm very interested to see where people feel that they might bail out of it and were they disturbed by this show.
So I think the worst of me, the best of me stops at the vegetarian because I think that can make people sick. You know, you're a vegetarian and you might have health reasons for doing that.
Right.
I hope the best of me says I stop there.
Mm-hmm.
The worst of me says I stop somewhere between giving the speech.
Right.
Hopefully I don't give the speech and moving the body to the stairwell. I don't think I get to the stairwell.
I think I could get to the point where I put him in a box. Outside of that, I don't think I could go any further.
This is an amazing thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we go to Jeff in Chicago. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning.
What were your thoughts?
Glenn. Well, two pieces to this, Glenn. First of all, the show is incredibly disturbing. I found myself watching this and thinking in my head, I wouldn't do that. But then when you replay and you think the situation the gentleman's been put in balancing this overall good of this charitable massive charitable donation to, you know, can I just do this to get to the overall good? And what I found myself wondering is, which percentages do these folks fall in about attending church, right?
From yesterday.
What's the constant moral north that was guiding these individuals, right? Because that's the ultimate balance here. And I'll throw this at you because I don't have the perfect tinfoil hat that you do, but I'm trying. a second show that I'll turn you on to that I would suggest you overlay with The Push, Carrie Byron, formerly of Mythbusters. The three of them started a show on Netflix entitled White Rabbit Project. Now, it's a series, but you only need to watch the first episode. In this first episode, they try to replicate superpowers, and they find a gentleman who successfully took a living cockroach and turned it into a cyborg that she could control with her telephone. Tell this live cockroach when to walk left, when to walk right. The ultimate conclusion of it was the scientist who did this was able to put electrodes on his arm, bridge them via wire to electrodes on her arm, and he could move her arm for her, whether she wanted to or not.
What?
But it was all fake?
It was all real.
All right. All right, we'll watch another show to watch. Don't add any shows to the you can't assign the teacher one. Homework. Let's go to Justin in Tennessee. Hello, Justin.
Hey, Glenn.
Hey.
My wife and I watched the show last night, and I was initially really disturbed and was thinking I would never do this stuff, especially once it got to putting the body in the crate. That was where I was like, I definitely wouldn't do that. I've always prided myself as being a critical thinker and being willing to stand up and challenge things.
Yeah.
But then I started thinking about my story. As a teenager, I was a hardcore Republican. I moved into libertarianism and then Christian anarchism, which is a whole nother thing.
That is a whole nother thing.
And you can't assign me homework on that. All right.
Tolstoy is a Christian anarchist. Anyway, I still consider myself that, but as I moved into that, I realized I was kind of more aligned with folks on the left, and I still occasionally would push back, but over the last probably 2014 to 2016, I was very much, I would even consider myself, I'd gotten to the point of being a social justice warrior, and sometime in 2016, I finally realized that I'm not thinking for myself anymore, and so watching this, I was like, this same sort of thing has happened to me in different ways.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would kill someone.
Yeah, I will tell you, and I don't want to tell how people, what they did at the end, but I thought it was really interesting, the interviews with those subjects afterwards, who talked and said, I have to rethink everything in my life. I
don't think that's where you would land
after
that experience.
And if you take this and you really watch this and you look at it as a science experiment, and you also have, if you've ever read Ordinary Men, which is a real deep scholarly look at how the Nazis turned the really good men who were police officers into brutal killers, it's the same story. It's exactly the same story. And so you kind of wonder, geez, would I do that or not? Let me go to Cliff in West Virginia. Hello, Cliff. Let me go to Kim in North Carolina. Kim, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Yeah, I saw it last night, and it was disturbing, honest and true. I started watching it, and like you said earlier, I kept asking myself, would I do that? Would I go this far? And I really don't think I would have gotten any further. Once they took him out of the crate and put him at the stairwell, that's when I would have said, sorry, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. Can't do this.
Did you feel like it was morally okay for them to make that show? I'm very conflicted on that question.
I in a way, I think it is, because it will open people's eyes to realizing that we aren't as we're not
as strong as we think
vulnerable.
We are.
Yeah, exactly. We're not. We're a lot more vulnerable than we think we are. Than we'd like to be.
When you said you found it disturbing, I found it the same way, but it's different than like a horror movie that you're like, okay, Saw, that was disturbing. there's no redeeming value in it. This was disturbing because in a good way, because it made me examine me. It put me into a very uncomfortable situation going, geez, I don't know. Would I do that? Would you agree with that, Kim?
All through the show. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kept asking myself all through that, would I do that? What would I do if I was that guy? You know, how far would I have gotten? And I mean, he kept saying no, no, and then he'd eventually do it. And I'm like, why are you doing that? You know it's uncomfortable. You know it's wrong. Why are you doing that? But at the same point, I'm sure all of us have our limits.
It's really,
and, you know.
Yeah. Kim, thank you for your call. It really is interesting because it's not just the social pressure. I mean, the social pressure really comes in towards the end, but it's not just the social pressure. It is the pressure of ends justify the means. Mm-hmm. This is such a good, and if I don't do this, it won't be good.
It's too important. I have to do this. I know I'm bending my principles, but this time it's too important. Quickly, just to review, we're talking about The Push. It's a Netflix show. If you haven't seen it, moderate spoilers are sort of applying here. We're not giving away the ending like that. But we
and
are
you'll still enjoy
it,
even if you...
Yes, absolutely.
The idea is, would you kill somebody? In 90 minutes, can they take average people and in 90 minutes later, they've become a cold-blooded killer.
Yeah. And it's interesting to hear every caller has said the same thing. They'll go a little bit down this road, but I know I would have stopped here. I know I would have stopped here. What I found interesting about it was, you know, I guess people, we are really more vulnerable than we thought. And I find that to be interesting because aren't the same people who were in this situation on the show likely would have sounded just like the callers and us. Who would say we would have stopped at this point.
Yeah.
But also kind of judging others and saying like, hey, you know, we are more vulnerable. And that's the underlying, I think, message here. There is an underlying message of the show, which is really informative for everything that you do in your life, which is you really need to have these decisions made before you get to a stressful point. Because when you get into the stressful moment, human beings will follow the path of least resistance way too often. You better have principles that stop you
and each time. And the answer would be every single time with these four people, and it may have been, it may be this in the end, that all four said, no, I won't kill. All four may have said, I will kill. But if you would have asked them at the beginning of the night, hey, will you murder this person? No way.
No way.
No way. They would have laughed. They would have walked away. No way. It's just that they had made compromises, starting as small as putting a flag in a vegetarian, in a non-vegetarian dish that said vegetarian. It's the small little compromises all the way. And that's the thing you read in, if you read Ordinary Men, it didn't happen. They didn't just all say, okay, I'm a good cop now, to I can just shoot children in the head in the middle of the woods and put them in a big burial mound. It didn't go that way. It was small little things that they needed to get them to violate one at a time, and we're in this together. I really do want to have more of a conversation on, is it morally right to do this as almost as a reality show? It wasn't, but it was so close to a reality show. It was really, it's uncomfortable, but I think important to watch.
How often do you think about your ears? I'm going to go out on a limb here and guess that it's a lot less often than you actually use them. You're using them right now to hear me speak. And you should think a little bit more about them, because if you don't take care of your ears, you're not going to be able to listen to me blab all day, every day. And you don't want to miss out on that. When your ears aren't clean, they can get really uncomfortable. They can be itchy. They can be painful. They can get plugged up. They can make it harder to hear. If you've ever been to a doctor and they've done the earwax cleaning, you're surprised at how well you hear after that's done. It's incredible. The earwash system from WaxRx is a doctor-developed system, and it's easy to use in the comfort of your own home. WaxRx comes with everything you need to safely clean out earwax and condition your ears for less than the cost of a doctor's visit. Go to usewaxrx.com to order your reusable earwash system today. Use offer code RADIO for free shipping. It's usewaxrx.com, promo code RADIO.
Glenn Beck.
Isn't it amazing how influenced we are by others, and how we all, like at the very beginning of the show on Netflix, The Push, they select people or they disqualify people that could, you know, be part of this experiment by just getting them to go into a room with three actors. Everybody, nobody knows they're actors. And they go in with these actors and they're just filling out an application for something. Nobody's talking. They're just all working and they're standing by these chairs. When the bell rings, the three actors sit down. Then does the person who they're trying to figure out can be on the show, will he sit down or not? And then when the bell rings twice, they stand up. Bell rings, sit down, stand up, sit down. It's amazing how many people do that. And are we doing that now on social media? Are we just hearing the bell ring and we see a story, we see a reaction, we hear a bell ring and we go to social media and we react the way the crowd is reacting?
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.